Danny Burns, Irish folk singer, has just released a brand new album, North Country, on Pinecastle Records. Combines all of his Irish background with bluegrass, New Orleans sounds. A lot of songs feature different parts of America influenced to Danny and interpreted by him. Powerful, powerful Irish singer and musician. He brings on this album, North Country, a lot of musicians from Nashville that you might automatically recognize as bluegrass musicians. Sam Bush, Tim O'Brien, Jerry Douglas, Scotty Vestal. Also brings in some wonderful singers, Tift Merritt, Holly Williams, Mindy Smith, and others. We're going to feature Danny in the second hour as we talk about this brand new album just released. You're going to enjoy listening to Danny Burns explain his travels through America and how this 3.5-year journey resulted in his brand new album, North Country. I'm really happy to welcome Danny Burns to Unreal Bluegrass. Danny, how are you feeling? And I mean that more than just like passing. I know you've been ill, and I appreciate the fact that you found the time to chat with us here.
Hey, Steve. Yeah, thanks for connecting. I had to take a pause on the last few legs of the tour and get some tea and soup going. So somewhat.
Well, and if you're singing, by the way, the people, the North Country is the album we want to talk about you, but your newest release, North Country on Pinecastle. If you listen to this, you recognize that not only does Danny write great songs, but and brings in all these great people. Don't let me forget who to ask what or who Chess Boxer is, but Danny's voice is so dynamic and the range is so powerful that you have to take care of that voice, man, because that's your thing.
Yeah, I try to keep you know, from the different guys that we got to work with on the record, and Sam and Tim O'Brien was always very good as regards trying to give me a few hints on taking care of the voice. Yeah, so we'll be good. Just getting over that. I usually get sick once a year, and this is it. So, and we had a long month of gigs, so I just got a wee bit ran down, but feeling better now.
I've been listening to North Country. I tell you what drew my attention to it is not just the players who were on it, who were raving about it on social media. Did you have like a release party or some sort of party? And was it the end of last year in December?
We had a couple of. I kind of tried to do release parties in all the cities that we play in regularly. So we did the first one in Nashville at the City Winery on January 7th.
That's right.
And that was a great fun. It was a ton of great players. Sam Bush came out and joined us, and we had Eamon McLaughlin on mandolin and fiddle, and Ross Holmes on fiddle. We had Jeff Picker on it, and Matt Heffy on banjo, and then Sam was with us for the most part of it.
And Danny, what really got my attention is not the guys who are on the album, like you know, Jerry Douglas, did Jerry produce this, or just real heavily involved in it?
Jerry just played on a couple of songs. I had opened for Jerry a few times in the night when it came time to record these songs. I had to ask them. But, I produced the record myself just over the course of about 3.5 years. So we took our time with it, you know.
Really? What I was going to say, and I keep losing track of this idea because I'm so fascinated by the music and your songwriting, is it wasn't just the people like Jerry who were on it that were on social media talking about it. It was other musicians that I know that aren't on here anywhere that were raving about seeing you perform this live, and this was like the greatest. And I thought, yeah, I trust all these people's opinions. So I started listening to it, and I get it. It's North Country is just, and you pull in so many great people. You mentioned Tim O'Brien. If you were an Irishman and you were an American, I know you've been here for a while, and you wanted to pull in a musician who is American and equally Irish, we'll say, Tim O'Brien with Journeys and Traveler Two Journeys, all, and he's always doing Irish. That's a perfect fit for an album like this to pull him in.
Well, yeah, I mean, Tim was just emailing me actually throughout the transatlantic sessions in Scotland, the Celtic Connections thing going on up there in Scotland this weekend. But Tim was the first guy I spoke with. We went into the butcher shop and we recorded over there with Fergie and Sean Sullivan, the butcher shop in Nashville, the studio, and we did two tunes together. And when we were chatting about doing a song called Darling Roisin, he had heard a previous recording of that, which was a little bit more traditional in traditional Irish, and I had kind of suggested that I kind of wanted this to be a thing. His people came to Wheeling, West Virginia, his grandparents, I believe. So from Ireland. So I kind of right. wanted to kind of pick it up there is kind of what I had in mind. I was like, if I had landed, if me and Tim had met each other at the turn of the century, and he had his inflection of that part of the world, but also had his parents or grandparents being from Ireland, how would that sound? So I kind of wanted to have that kind of conversation. I'd stick to the kind of more Irish vibe on it, and then he would bring his American, the evolution of the Celtic music into right. bluegrass and stuff right. like that.
And it's a natural progression, I think. I think it's a natural marriage, a natural progression of the sounds, because so many of them are so many of what we call in this country, generally bluegrass is Scottish-Irish based, or so. I mean, it's a perfect fit. And you're talking about the ninth cut on the album, Darling Rosine. That to me is one of the more traditional of the songs on the album that is clearly recognizable as an Irish kind of a ballad in my mind. I mean, there's other great tunes. Yeah. You have Cajun music on. You hear some that is straight ahead like bluegrass, which is great stuff. I love hearing Scotty Vestal's banjo. It's one of my favorites. So. But
Scott's amazing, yeah.
he's the most relaxed banjo player I think I've ever seen. It's like his hand is just like laying there, and he just flies through those things.
Effortless, yeah. I'm a fan of banjo, and I'm a fan of fiddle. So that on the record, I got a chance to go around and kind of, there's a bunch of different fiddle players on there. Tim played fiddle, Sam Bush played fiddle, Eamon McLaughlin, Ross Holmes. I'm sure there might be another fiddle player on there, maybe Aaron Malone. And then on banjo, it was Scott Vestal, majority banjo, and then also a guy down in Texas, Mike Sims, and then Matt Menefee, of course. I'm
Matt can do everything. If you need an electric guitar player, he can do that too.
I've seen him do it all. Yeah, drums, everything. Yeah.
The last time I saw him, he was going on the road with Warren Hayes.
Yeah,
that's going to be some electric guitar playing there. So, yeah, Matt's a great guy. You have so many great, and I want to talk about some of the songs, but you've mentioned some of them, but Tift Merritt, most people know, Holly Williams, Mindy Smith. I don't know Cara Dillon, but you brought in a lot of songs that I know.
Yeah, Cara's fantastic. She's from County Derry in the north of Ireland. Actually, Tim O'Brien was just singing with her last night up in Glasgow in Scotland at the that Celtic Connections. So that's why he was messaging me. But Cara's been one of my favourite Irish singers for Yonks. She's fantastic. She's done a ton of great records and collaborations. So I reached out to her, and she said I sent her the song. The song was a song called Amy, which I'd written about the passing of the late, great Amy Winehouse. And that's kind of where that collaboration came.
Well, I thank you for introducing me to her. I like to pick up. If I find something like that, and I'm thinking, okay, there's a name I'm writing down to pursue.
From
a musical interest.
Yeah, for sure. Excellent.
And the Amy Winehouse, let's talk about that a minute. I think if I had to, and I know you've been, this is not your first recording. I know that you've been all over. There are New Orleans sounds. There's a couple tunes on here that are. They don't have to be about New Orleans, but they're clearly influenced by that sound and that feeling, I think, from New Orleans music. But I think this whole album, Danny, is there's a lot of, even we were talking a little bit earlier about the Darling Rosine, which is, you seem to be saying to me, live now. Live now, take advantage of it. There's a whole album, not always in those exact words, but you know, even for the Amy, the song about Amy, it's you know, let us help you, or wait a minute, or live now. Am I wrong? Is that a general outlook that Danny Burns has to music? I'm not trying to read too much into it, but I do feel this. I do feel this hopeful. A lot of the tunes strike me that way.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of my perspective, or an Irish perspective, or whatever. Yeah, life's for a living, so, you know, get on with it.
what would be an Irish perspective that would lend it to that, as opposed to the personal perspective of Danny Byrne?
I think the Irish perspective is just get on with it, you know, and enjoy it, and don't be hurdles and all that stuff, which everybody has, and that's in life, you know, but just get on with it, you know, and try do it with a smile if you can, you know, and enjoy it.
Let It Go, the opening cut, Let It Go, which is, again, that powerful. I can't stress to people enough, and they'll hear lots of your music on the show in and around this discussion, but Let It Go, I wrote bold Your voice is so bold, and your voice is like that throughout, or you can be soft. And let's say, for example, we talked about the Darling Rosine, and even I would say the Humming Bee is a softer sound than Amy, certainly. But your Let It Go is such a bold, your voice is just really dynamic. I don't know whatever, I told you that before we started, that's the word I keep focusing on.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, Let It Go was a tune, I wrote that when I was living in New Orleans for a long time. And I just had tons of great friends and experiences down there, all the musicians I used to hang and run with, and then, of course, all the bartenders you'd know. I worked doing some bartending myself between gigging. So, yeah, just kind of all the different stories you see on a nightly basis, you know, in New Orleans.
Oh, there's a lot of them. How long were you in? How long were you? Let's talk a little bit about that sweep. I know you've been all over in this country and certainly Ireland, but New Orleans, there's a couple tunes on here talk a little bit about what you've absorbed and continue to absorb in places like that.
That was a great experience for me. I moved there in 04 and I stayed until 2012. I was there before and after Katrina. When we went back after Katrina, you know, you kind of became like, you were there, you were kind of branded, you were there before Katrina, so you were kind of married, grandfathered in as the local. So that was cool. Musically, it was a great city, still is, you know, very open-minded, so you could fit in with anybody, and they were kind of immediately open to where you were coming from, whatever vibes you were bringing. So it was very good for me to kind of develop all. I played all sorts of music down there, some better than others. Well, I got a chance to try everything that you would want to try, you know, play, you know, music that maybe you weren't terribly good at, but at least you got to, you know, flush it out, try it and see what. And then the stories, then just tons of stories. I used to live in a place called Bay St. John in Mid-City, just a beautiful place. We're heading back there now on February 9th. We're playing at Chickiwawa in New Orleans on the 9th. So I love that city. It's a fantastic place.
It's a little bit of everything and a whole lot of everything also. If you look for it, you can find it everywhere. You know, I was told, I told you before we started, I'm a lawyer, not relevant, except that I had a case, I had to spend about 6 weeks in New Orleans, and I got to travel around and see all the stuff that, and I was with a local, let's not do that, let's go where the locals go, where the music is,
yeah.
And I, man, it just blew my mind,
Yeah, it's full of life, it's just really a fantastic place, and you know, of all the places I've been, I think that's probably one of the coolest places I've been lived or been to. You know, just the emphasis on the food and the music and the living and the culture, you know, and all the monastery stuff comes secondary, you know.
On the album, I hear instantly, and I could be missing other things, and I don't want to read too much into it, but Look Into Her Eyes and Human Heart, to me, are clearly influenced, intentionally or otherwise, from music you've absorbed from New Orleans. I mean, does that sound accurate?
Yeah. I was doing a regular gig in the French Quarter when I moved down there first. It was just a bar pub gig. It was a 4 to 8 every day at an Irish pub. And I met this professor from University of Mississippi, I think, and he was telling me about this thesis that someone had done or he was working on that was trying to draw the lines between traditional Irish guitar and Delta blues in open tunings of D and stuff like that. And when he said it to me, it instantly made sense to me, because that's the tuning I grew up on playing, and that's how I enjoy the stuff I write and play. It's in open D or open diagonal or G, open tunings, and which is very kind of the go-to first thing you learn in Ireland if you're playing traditional Irish music. But and then they hear the Delta blues, and he kind of was showing me references of this, and that was first when I came to New Orleans, so I think I immediately bonded with this idea. And then also then he went into talk about Cajun music and the Arcadia fiddle and the Celtic vibes there, and it just made me feel very comfortable in a place that I didn't really think.
Yeah.
I didn't know anything about New Orleans. I was thinking, you know, as a zero jazz guy going to New Orleans.
Yeah, but their jazz is so bluesy. If you get away from what we would think of traditional jazz, certainly in their city, but the jazz is so blues-based.
Yeah, and R&B is, it's a different, you know, I've lived in New York too, and if I did have to pick my jazz, I would prefer to listen to it in New Orleans. style jazz over a New York style of jazz. Just, yeah, for me, it's a little bit more relaxing and comforting.
Well, I don't think it's as you walk into a, let's say you walk into a club in New York, and there's some jazz guys cutting each other up. It's not necessarily something you want to jump into right away. You know.
And last time I was at a jazz club was with Jerry Douglas in New York. So
okay.
And that was amazing too. You know. So I think there's a place for everything. But
yeah.
If we're talking taste, I'm being a Donegal, a country guy.
There you go.
I like the little more laid back vibes.
Yeah, and Holly Williams, we talked about two songs of it that I think are New Orleans Absorption, let's say, or She Joined John, Look Into Her Eyes, and then Tift Merritt on Human Heart, which oddly enough, Human Heart, almost kind of the title itself, you start thinking about some of those things in New Orleans that are, you know, they have some old stories down there about witches and different things, and even though that's not what the song is about, I think it's interesting that that is the name of the song that has a clear Cajun Creole kind of feel to it.
Cool. Well, this is the interesting part of hearing people, how they digest it, because I would have never thought that myself, but that's cool.
I don't know why I thought that. I just thought, but so, and Tifta Merritt, we've mentioned, she's on here a lot.
I met her in New York City at a Teddy Thompson Everly Brothers tribute. I had written the song, and I said, can I send you a demo? And she said, sure. So I sent her a demo. I said, yeah, sure, we'd love to do it. So she came in, and we cut her vocal in New York. And then I was kind of continuing the project maybe a couple of months later down at Gary Bichot's studio in Nashville, and I pulled it up for him, and he had said... He really liked it, and he said, he knows Tift, and they've worked together before. And he had said to me, I'd never heard Tift sing grass before, and I thought that was very interesting to hear that coming from, you know, Gary's mouth. So that was a cool vibe for me. I wasn't there yet, but once he said that was very cool. Yeah, you know.
And then we'll go back to. Chess Box. So I keep reminding him. I don't know who or what Chess Box. I assume it's a human. You get the credits, but I don't know what they're doing, what this person is doing throughout.
So Chess Boxer is a banjo fiddle duo that doesn't exist anymore. It's Ross Holmes on fiddle and Matt Menifee on banjo.
Okay.
And they had a thing going on where they had a record and they were doing this just fiddle banjo tunes, and it was epic as regards complexity and UD as well, very melodic stuff. So I've been friends with those guys, and then always hanging out with them when I'm in Nashville. So when they kind of disbanded that, I kind of said, hey, can I still get some of that vibe on the record? And they were like, yep, sure. So kind of.
You said earlier it was 3.5 years in the making, I guess, from concept till you're finished?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say, well, just production took 3.5 years, okay. 3.5, I'd say. So songwriting and everything else. I mean, Great Big Sea was written when I was almost 16, 17 years ago. That
really?
Tune I wrote. So
is that a song from the perspective of someone on the boat, or is that the ship?
Great Big Sea, I suppose, there's a few Irish guys that are friends of mine that have their concept of it, and I hate to spoil that for anybody. So
let's leave it going.
Yeah, I just kind of recently explaining what it meant to him. So I just okay.
Listen,
sure.
I don't care to say, have an artist tell me what it means. These are just things that I hear. So I say let everybody interpret it. And that was a question I had as I was listening and reading the lyrics and perspective of the singer or protagonist, whatever. It's a story. I'm just always curious about. And you've left it nicely open to interpretation.
I think I learned that, and I do that. I think I was doing that, but then someone pointed out to me in New York again, someone was saying how horrible if you were at an art museum and you're looking at this beautiful piece of art and then you're mesmerized by it and then you draw your own conclusion on what's going on in that picture and then someone just walks behind you
and
tells you that's the guy buying a hot dog, you know?
No. I hate that completely. I don't want someone to spell
no, out. Yeah, so I'm not saying it's by any means you are, but I'm just someone had explained that to me. I think I just was doing that all for a long time as a writer, but I didn't really. I never would have thought to kind of verbalize it. And then when I heard that kind of little story, I was like, oh, that that's like, you know, spoiler alert kind of thing. You know, you don't want
to. Yeah, it's great. I'm talking to Danny Burns, if you're just tuning in to Unreal Bluegrass. The name of the album is North Country on Pinecastle. The title cut is the last cut on the album. And I will tell you this, the album art is phenomenal. I want every one of those pictures. I want every one of those pictures. I don't know what to do with them, but they're beautiful outdoors. Well, buffalo seems to be the motif that surrounds everything. Why is that?
That's on the front, that's a fantastic photographer called Miles McGlynn. He's up in Bozeman, Montana, and I came across his art. We have vinyl coming out in March, and it'll be all the bigger images in the vinyl.
Oh, good.
But it's all his images. On the front, that's Bison 11. He's still roaming on a ranch up there. On the back of the album is Bison 12 and 13. And
do they know their numbers?
I don't think the Bison knows the numbers. No.
Okay, all right.
That's who they are. So I'm going to make my way up to see them, hopefully this summer. So
beautiful photographs. I mean, so it's just every time you flip through it, and there's horses and mountains, and not to take away from anything else, but the whole package, in other words, let's just say this. North Country is not only his incredible songwriting and dynamic, and you've brought all these great musicians and singers, but in your voice, but also it's really nice to look at.
Thank you. When I saw it, I saw the images, I was like, that's exactly what I felt would go along with the tunes, you know?
The I'll let you go here in a minute. I know you're still recovering. Down and Out is the most, let's say, how do we find this, how do we describe the tone, the most blunt? Is that a good way to describe it? I've got all kinds of little notes stuck to the CD, which that doesn't bother me, but it's certainly the most frank or most blunt song on the album as far as what you're feeling
okay.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I like simple country tunes. I think, you know, being simple and straight is for me and my taste is more appealing than trying to be all metaphory and overthinking and overwriting. I think that's not something I'm into. I like some complicated stuff, but anyway, that tune that was written pretty quick, and it was just about set a mood or a situation that was, and then I brought it to Sam and Jerry, and they laughed, and they said, "Yeah, love it." And it's got us into some trouble.
That's all right. Don't say any more about that, because I'll tell you what, I think I've already aired it, and I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I've had the downloads because of the way things are put on AirPlay Drive. I've had the album for a couple of weeks, and great, oddly enough, the physical copy arrived today, which is good, so I can put my hand. I'm an old guy. I like to have things in my hand. I just like to see things. I've played it before. I've had it since probably when it dropped, and it's okay. We'll just leave that right there. It's a great song. All these things, man, and your life experience. I know you've traveled around a lot, but it must just be. And I know you go back to. I'm sure you go back to Ireland a lot, but you certainly travel around a lot in America.
We bring the kids back every now and again, you know, when we get the opportunity.
Well, it all winds up in your music. It's. I want people to hear this, to hear that incredible Irish traditional thing that you have, and you do have some from some very deliberate bluegrass. Was this an effort to just happen this way? There's a bluegrass tinge to several of these tunes. Some of them are just directly with the banjo and Sam and Jerry. Was there a decision involved in doing that, or just happened that way?
When I came up out of when we moved up from New Orleans to D.C., I jumped straight in to join a bluegrass band, and we were playing around the pubs and bars in D.C. and I had been playing with fiddle players and banjo players all growing up in Ireland. As much as we listened to traditional Irish music, we were listening to Willie Whelan, George Jones, all that stuff. And also, you know, there would have been mountain music coming in too. Both my parents were into all that stuff, you know. So as much as we had traditional Irish music, there would also have been bluegrass, and there would have been country music on the radio. I had tried, after leaving New Orleans and playing all sorts of music, when I kind of sat in with this bluegrass band in D.C., then I started kind of playing the songs, and they seemed to fit in with those parts in that form. pretty quickly, and then I was like, ah, this is probably the home for these tunes, you know.
It's great. I mean, you pulled in some great, and we've gone over the list that they haven't mentioned Dan Tominski yet, but I mean, all the people that you've brought into this, well, they all fit
Dan,
so well.
Dan was great. Yeah, Dan's stellar, awesome dude. Sang lovely on a tune called "Waiting on Something to Give." Everybody was great. Everybody was very supportive and just sending on messages. And it was released on January 18th, and I think it's popped into the bluegrass charts here and there. And things are going good. Yeah.
And I'm happy for you. I love this. I play it, and I would tell people play it and play it loud, so you get all that nice, that full force of Danny's voice before he lost it up in New York, and all these things recorded. But your voice is powerful. It's also very sensitive in the tunes. They'll recognize. We've talked about some of those tunes that bring down the not the literal volume, but you know what you're trying to say. And it's absolutely a great album.
Well, thank you, Steve. Good man.
Yeah. Listen, I'll let you get back to what you're doing on a hopefully a lovely day, and you'll be well, and you'll go. Tell a little bit about the website. I'm sure you have one of those.
Yeah, all the tour dates and all that good stuff is on DannyBurnsBand.com, and we're on the Facebook and all the Instagram, all the social stuff.
Well, I know how you feel. I'm gonna try to find when the LP is released, because I'm gonna see the bigger pictures inside of it. Normally, I don't do that. I still have a phonograph, but I'm gonna get my hands on that, because
I'll make sure to get you a copy.
All right, bud. Listen, Danny, thanks. Danny Burns, man, great album, North Country on Pine Castle. I appreciate your time, and well done.
All right, Steve. Good man. Thank you.
I'll see you. Bye.